Monday, March 23rd for the Willmar Municipal Utilities Commission. And we'll open with a brief statement here. The Chair and General Manager of Willmar Municipal Utilities Commission and our Chief Legal Counsel have determined under Minnesota Statute 13D.021 that in-person meetings of the Municipal Utilities Commission are not practical or prudent due to the COVID-19 health pandemic and the peacetime emergency declared by Governor Walz pursuant to Minnesota Statutes Chapter 12, and that our meetings, including this meeting, shall therefore be conducted by telephone or other electronics pursuant to Minnesota Statute 13D.021 until such time as it is no longer impractical or imprudent for this commission to resume in-person meetings. Now, with the legal notice covered, I do have just a few comments before we continue on. First, I want to take a moment and thank Willmar Utility staff and employees for their hard work in keeping things running smoothly in these challenging times. I'm grateful to our customers who are understanding of the decision to close down our lobby until further notice. Rest assured that our utility continues to operate fully as we monitor the COVID-19 coronavirus situation and are ready to respond if conditions change. We face an unprecedented moment for this generation, but fortunately, we're all in this together. It's critical that each of us who are able take heed of the current recommendations designed to minimize the impact of increased burden on our healthcare system and additional risk of exposure to essential employees who we rely upon to keep our world going. We can take this time to rest and prepare for the coming months when we'll have plenty of opportunity to join together and help each other through whatever lies ahead. These short-term inconveniences can greatly help to mitigate deeper and more prolonged sacrifices. Although some things are momentarily a little different, our lives continue on, just as is demonstrated by our forthcoming meeting today. In the meantime, for those who may find themselves with some extra time, I might suggest a little more prayer and devotions. With that, I now move into our business for the day. Commissioners, does anyone have any changes to the agenda? If not, I would move forward with our consent agenda, consisting of our minute meetings from March 9th, as well as bill payments in the amount of approximately $2.5 million. And I would offer a resolution for approval and would be looking for a second.
I second that.
I'll make the resolution.
Commissioner Lammers got a resolution. Commissioner Mahbub, you have a second on that?
Yeah, I second that.
We have a resolution and a second. Looking at the bill payments, I didn't see anything out of the ordinary there, but I'd open it up for any questions or discussion.
There, Commissioner Mattern, there are no capital improvements on our bill listing this meeting.
Any other questions or discussion on the resolution? Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll call, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Erickson?
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Mattern?
Yes.
Commissioner Lammer?
Aye.
Commissioner Mahbub?
Aye.
Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
Commissioner DeBleek?
Aye.
Thank you.
That carries. Thank you, everyone. Next on our agenda, we have an audit report for 2019, a presentation from our auditor, Justin McGraw. He's a CPA with Conway, Duth & Schmiesing. And Mr. McGraw, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
Absolutely. It's great to be. I'm going to try to share my screen so you can see what I'm going to cover today. So in front of you is our audit presentation. Essentially, this is a summation of our financial statements that we provide, as well as the management letter that we provide to the commission on kind of how the audit went, any recommendations we may have, and those types of items. So I'm gonna follow this format today. And if you're looking for a little more information or a little more detail, the financial statements are a great place to start, as well as the management letter. So as I'm going through it, if there's any questions, feel free to interrupt me or stop me. Since we're not there in person, I can't see you raise your hand necessarily. So just speak out and I'll try to answer them the best I can. Table of contents here, this is kind of an agenda for what I'm gonna cover today. Some of the highlights that we're gonna go through based on your 2019 financial statements, and I'll jump right into it. The independent auditor's report. So Our auditor's report is kind of a breakdown of what we as auditors, what our responsibility is, the commission itself, what their responsibility it is, their responsibilities are, and the intent of our audit, which is to determine if the statements are free from material misstatement and can be relied upon to gauge performance and for future decision-making purposes. So this is kind of the big takeaway from the rest of the report. If you don't get anything else, right at the bottom there, in our opinion, the financial statements are presented fairly, in our opinion, and they can be relied upon. Also, a couple of things besides just numbers that are in the report. There's a management discussion and analysis. This gives your management team an opportunity to explain in more of a narrative format some of the changes and the events that happened during the year, and what are some of the causes in those changes in the commission balances. So I do recommend, if you get a chance, to take a look at that and kind of read through some of the big takeaways there. The operating margins for 2019, you know, they were sufficient enough to cover the debt payments that were required by the commission, as well as prepare for future capital improvements and even make some capital improvements during the year. There's also a benchmark section in there, which kind of compares how WMU stacks up against the competitors, similar organizations in the region, and some of the different ratios and margins that they use. So you can kind of see how WMU compares to its peers. So those are kind of the big items in the MD&A to look at. And if you have any questions as you went through that, you know, feel free to let myself know, or I'm sure Denise or John would be more than happy to answer those as well. So moving on to the numbers. So here, the statement of net position. So this is essentially the balance sheet of the commission. On the first slide here, we have the assets and your deferred inflows and outflows. You see here current assets, these would be your items, cash, accounts receivable, prepaids. You can see there that there was an increase going from 2018 to 2019. The big cause for that increase is cash. You know, the operating revenues of the commission were more than enough to cover the operating expenses. And you can see that increase in your cash balances. Also, accounts receivable increased. So with the change in the billing cycles that occurred in 2019, going from weekly to semi-monthly, you see that there's a little bit more, people have less chance to pay their bill because they're billed less often. So you see a slight increase in those amounts that are billed, but uncollected as of the end of the year. Your non-current assets. So restricted investments. This is restricted cash. Sometimes there's debt covenants that require cash to be held in reserve to make those debt payments. You see there's a big decrease there going from 2018 to 2019. Obviously, paying off the electric bonds in 2019, the requirement to hold that cash and kind of reserve it for debt payments went away because the debt went away. Also, in your non-current assets are capital assets. So these would be your infrastructure, your buildings, your equipment, those types of items. You'll see there was an increase in 2019. You know, there was some upgrades, some improvements made during the year. A couple of the big ones were the premium substation, some new water mains, some street lighting, and I think some new equipment like a new truck. So those are some of the larger dollar value items that the commission either you purchased or constructed during the year. Moving to the bottom half of your balance sheet, liabilities, deferred inflows. Liabilities, so current liabilities, accounts payable, these are your routine monthly bills. You'll see there was a decrease in 2019 compared to 2018. A lot of that is project related, that decrease. At the end of 2018, there were some outstanding bills, contracts payable for the premium substation, with that project being completed in 2019, those outstanding amounts aren't there. Salaries and benefits, relatively the same. You know, that was kind of expected with not a large change in the number of staff or the operations. So your salaries were expected to remain consistent, and then they did. Your long-term liabilities, these are things like your debt, your net pension liability, your other post-employment benefits liability. The big the big reason for the decrease here is the debt payment. You obviously paid off the bonds early. That was about $4.8 million. So that's a pretty big decrease from one year to the next. And that's kind of what's affecting that change you're seeing in your long-term liabilities. And then your net position. So if you were to receive all the money owed to you, sell all your assets and pay off all your debts, this is kind of what's left over, where you would have kind of what's left of the commission if you sold everything and paid all your debts. You can see here that went up in 2019 compared to 2018. One of the items, increase in net investment and capital assets. This is basically all your equipment, infrastructure, buildings, less any debt owed on those items. You can see with a big decrease in your debt in that equation, you have a big increase in your investment in your capital assets. So really you kind of own everything out right now for your capital assets. And then the restricted amount, that correlates to your restricted cash. So there's, we kind of discussed the change in restricted cash earlier. That's kind of what's causing the change in your restricted net position. And then your unrestricted net position. You see here, this is kind of the funds that are available to meet ongoing operations, future capital equipment or capital replacement improvements, those types of items. So you have a fairly healthy net position to sustain the commission going forward. So that's all. Those are all great things. And we'll kind of go a little bit more into more in depth on the factors that affect your net position in the next few slides. So you can see here's a visual of your net position from one year to the next. Historically, you kind of been in this same composition of your net position. And these are big dollar amounts. So even, $4.8 million in the debt payment doesn't have as dramatic effect as you may think. But you did see here, the net investment in capital assets did increase in proportion to everything else. So your revenues and expenses. You can see here, we kind of show your budget, your actual, the difference between those two, and then prior year's actual, and the difference between prior year's actual and the current year. So you can see utility revenues, they increased in 2019. And there's a few divisions that did better than others. For instance, electric and district heating, those two actually went down compared to 2018. For the electric division, you sold about 2.5 million kilowatt hours less in 2019 than you did 2018. And on the heating district side, as that division is going to be discontinued coming up here this year, you found more customers, found other sources of heating, which I think was kind of the plan to kind of phase that out, and let those heating district customers find other means for heating. And you're seeing that people are being proactive and finding that other source of heating going forward. Your other revenues, kind of the last item there in your operating revenues, that had a large decrease in 2019 compared to 2018. And part of that is the Missouri River Energy Services agreement, where the commission began receiving monthly payments for that capacity, or generation capacity, excuse me, during the year. And that's kind of what's driving that increase. Looking at your operating expenses, they decreased slightly increased slightly compared to 2018. But you can see the kind of the composition of where those expenses are relatively steady, with the one exception maybe of purchase power versus generated power, as the commission moves more towards buying power versus generating their own power. You can see that there's a kind of an inverse relationship between those two. Looking at some of your non-operating income, other income and expenses, investment income. So your investment income increased significantly compared to the prior year. Part of that was due to the overall economic conditions. I think 2018 was a pretty good year across the board for the economy. And you're kind of seeing those returns in your investment income. You might not be able to say the same thing next year, everything that's going on now. But with the higher interest rates and larger amounts invested, you saw that investment income go up quite a bit. Now we'll kind of go into the individual divisions themselves and their performance during the year. So start with the electric division, kilowatt hours purchased versus kilowatt hours sold. So this is kind of a good idea of what you're generating, purchasing versus what you're able to sell for the individual customers. You can see there was a decrease. We kind of discussed that decrease a little bit earlier in that electric revenue. And this is maybe a different way to look at it on the kilowatt hour side versus the revenue side. You see that decrease there. But you can see that the purchased and generated versus sold, they kind of decreased similar percentages. And that's kind of related partly to your line loss. Your line loss decreased pretty significantly in 2019 compared to 2018. So historically, you've been around that 4.5% rate. In 2019, you're right around 2.5%. So that's why that gap between purchased and generated and sold seems to be narrowing. You're not losing as much in line loss. And I think the average from the Energy Information Administration says it's about 5%. So you guys are slightly ahead of the average in the electric fund. So that's very good. looking at revenue versus cost of power. This shows the cost of power purchased versus what the commission was able to sell that power for. This gap here is a gap between the $30 million in revenue versus the $15 million in cost is really what the commission needs to use to pay kind of their day-to-day other operating expenses. Salaries, supplies, repairs, maintenance, those types of items. This is what that gap is to be used for. So then you look at your net income. So you can see the net income has kind of followed the trend of increasing over the last 5 years. And it's kind of a testament to having those rates set at the appropriate level where the electric division can kind of build up those capital reserves or, like we saw in 2019 here, pay off debt early. So all those things kind of, or all those items can help that electric fund kind of build up that reserve and set itself up for future capital replacements or even major repairs in the future. Moving on to the water division. Again, we kind of show cubic feet pumped, cubic feet sold, similar to the kilowatt hour purchase versus sold. this is to give you an idea of what's being pumped versus what you're actually able to turn around and bill the customers for. You can see here, it's been pretty consistent over the past 5 years. That loss, water loss, water system loss, I guess I should call it, has ranged from 13 to 20%. The average is about 16. So the commission is right around that average, depending on, I guess, what year you're looking at. But that line loss can be from things like evaporation. Obviously, leaks can go in there. There's various factors that can affect line loss throughout the year. And then we'll look at that, the revenue versus the cost of production. Similar to the electric division, having that gap between what you can bill for and what it costs you for the water, that's where you're going to pay those other operating costs. So you can see here, you've maintained a fairly healthy, margin, and that's been able to really help the commission pay those operating expenses, control those operating expenses, and then build up a little bit of reserve in that water division for items like the water main replacement that happened in 2019. You have the cash on hand to fund those things. And then the net income. Again, the net income for the water division kind of follows that same trend of the electric division. You had a healthy increase in 2019 compared to 2019 compared to 2018. And that looks like it's really due to your increase in revenue. The operating expenses held relatively steady throughout the year. Like I said, there were some capital replacements that went on in there. But the big factor in that equation is revenues going up, expenses are staying relatively the same. In the heating division, so you can see here, this kind of tells the story, I'm sure what you've been talking about in your meetings, the divisions being discontinued, it's going to be taken out of service, And you've seen customers in the kind of demand respond to that. You know, both the pounds of steam and the kilowatt hours sold decreased in 2019 compared to 2018, and that's kind of similar happened in 2018 looking at 2017. As more customers transitioned from the district heating to other sources, whether it be natural gas, propane, whatever it may be. And then along with less sales, your revenue went down as well. And this was kind of anticipated. Went into 2019, you can see it, even looking at some of your budget amounts, you're expecting more customers to transition, and that's what's happening. And your net income went down. So, I mean, obviously, if your revenue goes down, the hope is that your operating costs follow that, and they did, but not at the same amount. You still have to provide that same level of service to those customers, just maybe not spread across as many customers. So you're seeing an increase, a decrease in your net income, but you still were able to turn a profit for the district heat. So that's good as you wind down. It's not a loss leader at this point at all. So that's kind of the numbers. A few other things we look at as part of our audit is the commission's compliance with state statutes. These would be things like contracts and bidding, depository public funds, conflicts of interest, those types of items. So as we do our testing, we look at compliance with the applicable state laws, and we're happy to report that through our testing, nothing came across that really was a legal compliance issue. We did note one item with use of public, use of facilities by commission employees and I don't know if it's commissioners or employees, but commission, we'll say commission employees. So as far as we know, and I'm aware, there's no state statute that allows commission members to use public facilities for personal purposes. So it could be an item such as working on a personal vehicle with utility commission tools, facilities, pulling in to maybe like a work shed or work bay to work on a private vehicle, those types of items. We did hear some reports of that. We weren't able to confirm them necessarily, but it's a good reminder that public purpose for the commission, that if there's a benefit provided to a commission employee, that's not necessarily granted by state statute, then you need to maybe review those use rules and policies so that they're not necessarily gaining a benefit that the rest of the general public does not have. So that's one item we wanted to discuss with you related to public purpose and legal compliance. But we also, in addition to legal compliance testing with state statutes, we look at internal controls. So this is kind of how financial information flows through the commission and who does what in that process. So if you've been on the commission maybe before, you probably heard these things. But there's two findings we have related to internal controls. One is the auditor prepared financial statements. This would be kind of that product that you have in front of you, whether it be the management letter or the financial statements. You know, while these documents are derived from the commission's records, it is something that we take and we put it in this format that you see. So it's really a disclosure from us to you that, hey, this is all your information, but we put it in this format. And then the second item is segregation of duties. So in that financial transaction recording process, we like to see different people have different responsibilities. So not one person is asked to do maybe a record keeping and have custody of assets and have the authority to release those assets. So it's a cost benefit analysis that has to be done there on adding more people into that process. But right now you have some individuals that are asked to perform several of those aspects of a transaction recording. And it's really, I guess a good notice from us as auditors to you at the commission level that it's something to be aware of, and you're another set of eyes Like you saw it when I started the meeting here, when we started the meeting, I started looking at that claims listing, going over what's on there. That's a great practice to help mitigate maybe some of the risks that are associated with having a limited segregation of duties. And then moving away from the financial statements, the management letter, this is a communication we like to give from us as auditors to you at the commission level to let you know kind of how the audit went. We're happy to report that, you know, between John, Denise, and all your staff out there, everybody was very helpful and getting us the information we requested. I know sometimes as auditors, we ask a lot of questions and we ask for a lot of information and a lot of documents, and they were very accommodating and helpful in that process. So we're happy to say that. We had no disagreements related to the audit as far as the financial recording or the transactions that need to be recorded or any adjusting entries that needed to be made. So again, this is kind of an opportunity for us to thank your staff for all their help. I know it's tough to go back, think about what happened last year and dig up old information while trying to stay current on your workload, but we do appreciate their assistance with that. And then other audit findings or issues. This isn't really an issue. It's more of a heads up on a new accounting standard that's coming out. But GASB 87 is a new government accounting standard that came out, and it's related to leases. So there'll be a change in fiscal year 2020, on how leases are recorded and the criteria for booking an asset related to lease or liability related to leases. And it affects both the lessors and lessees. So while we understand the commission doesn't have significant leasing activities currently, we want to make sure you're aware that there is a change in those standards. And if that were to be a financing option, the commission were to choose going forward, some of the aspects or impacts they'll have on your financial statement. So if you have any questions on GASB 87, you know, obviously you and your staff can feel free to reach out to us as auditors. But as the commission kind of sits right now, there's not a whole lot of leasing activity that goes on. So it's really have a relatively minor impact.
Justin, like the rental boiler that we have, that would fall under the new GASB 87?
Correct, yeah. So it depends on the length of the contract. Pretty much anything over a year will be booked as an asset versus maybe more operating expense that you pay that lease payment monthly. And then it goes through expense. Essentially, with GASB 87, you would book the time value, present value of that contract, and book it as a right to use asset. So it would have an impact mainly on your capital assets, and maybe your lease expenses, your operating expenses.
Okay.
So, with that, I'll open up to any questions anybody has at this time. Otherwise, you have my contact information on the screen there. So feel free, if you're thinking about some things I said today, or you're reading through the financial statements and you have questions that come up and I wish I would ask Justin this or that, you know, feel free to call, email. Won't stop in the office at this point in time. We're closed, but you can always feel free to call or email.
Mr. McGraw, thank you for your presentation. Commissioners, do you have any questions? General Manager Heron, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I don't have a question. I just want to thank Justin for his presentation and tell him that, you know, it was a good job.
Cool.
Thank you, Commissioner Erickson. General Manager Heron, could I have you address maybe a little bit on the kind of one of the end findings there and staff use of equipment, maybe sure. Some changes to policy there?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Mattern. What we'll be doing, we'll be looking at our policy. We'll be informing staff of the findings and recommendations coming from our auditors, and we'll be, you know, adjusting accordingly. Just as Mr. McGraw indicated, some of our staff, they use the facility, they pull their vehicle in there, change the oil in it, use it for wash bays. Sometimes, some degree, they take some of our power tools, from what I understand, home for personal use. So we'll have to tighten that up and close that gap there.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, any other questions at all for Justin? All right. Thank you again, Justin. I appreciate the update. It sounds like, for the most part, nothing real extraordinary. It sounds like we're on a good track here. So I appreciate all your work.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Commissioners, we'll be looking then for a motion for approval of the audit statement as well as a second.
I will make that.
Second.
I have a motion and a second from Commissioner Mahbub and Commissioner Weber. Any discussion? All right. Go ahead, Commissioner Mahbub.
Yeah, I was just mentioning that it was a good discussion that you have in terms of the usage of the equipment and the facility. Is that something that the policy that we as the commissioners have to make, or this is something the John and staff can really put a policy together and submit it to us? I was just wondering.
That's a good question, Commissioner Mahbub. We will be looking at staff level and what we have for policies regarding that, and adjust, tweak, modify, and bring them forward for commission approval. So we'll be following through or following up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good question. Any other discussion on this motion? Okay, I'm going to attempt to do a regular motion on this. If not, we'll have to take it to roll call. But all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 And is there any opposed? All right, that motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Thank you again, Justin.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, next on our agenda, we have the March 19th Planning Committee meeting minutes. And Commissioner Weber, I'm going to turn this one over to you.
Nate, you're speaking. Here we go.
Yeah. All right. Hold on here. Let's see.
Actually, Commissioner Mattern, I believe you wanted to turn this over to Commissioner DeBleek.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right, Commissioner DeBleek.
Thought I missed something there.
Yeah, sorry.
I was wondering what Weber has done.
Planning committee.
I'll try.
DeBleek, I missed something there.
Yeah. Chairman DeBleek, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mattern. Said this meeting was held on March 19th. It was the first time we've used the teleconferencing meeting program. So I think it worked fairly well for that. So first item on the agenda that we discussed was the open house for WMU. I've had that in the past at the Civic Center, and we keep running into more and more issues with the Civic Center. They want to have ice on earlier in the year and those type of issues. So this year we were looking at doing something with Wilmerfest, which is scheduled for the latter part of June, that we would have sponsor something during the opening of Wilmerfest during probably the downtown block party was what was discussed. So yeah, we're looking at a possibility of some cost savings by doing that, and that also being able to probably meet have more of our customers to be able to take part in the event. So anyway, after we discussed this it thoroughly, we did a recommendation or a consensus of the committee to confer with staff to support the 75th Wilmerfest anniversary and approve moving the WMU open house to coincide with the Wilmerfest for 2020. Second item, staff had given a presentation on moving forward with the power plant environmental studies. We're looking at doing a phase one, phase two environmental study at power plant, which is needed before we can move forward with any demolition or repurpose of the plant. And the city also has the power plant within an opportunity zone. So it may be timely that we do some of these studies. So anyway, we had three bids from engineering firms. After we reviewed the proposals and followed up, there was the bid recommendation from Warneck, if I'm saying that right, or for an estimated amount of $59,310 to do the phase one, phase two, and environmental studies at the power plant. And it was a consensus of the planning committee to concur with that and recommend that the bid be awarded to Warneck Associates for the estimated amount of $59,310. Item three, we had talked about the catastrophic event plan. Staff prevented a detailed outline for a catastrophic event plan, utilizing options to bring in a total of 7 2-megawatt generators. Under the plan, these would be rental generators, and we'd utilize both our existing diesel generators we have and also the rental generators. We'd probably be able to perform if it was provide a generation if by performing rolling blackouts. And by the use of the rental generators, it could probably be pretty much plug and play from Ziegler. They would have them ready to go and could have them on site within 24 hours. And cost estimates to make things ready, to be able to just bring these units in and plug and play, is probably around $150,000. So anyway, following discussion, the committee consensus was that we approve the staff recommendation for the catastrophic event plan, which consisted of this rental of these 7 2-megawatt generators units from Ziegler. Transmission investment project. That thereafter, we reviewed presentation from staff, and we'd like that staff to have that entire transmission investment project, because it's a major project and there's a lot of moving parts to it, be presented as part of the special agenda item at this meeting. So following review and discussion, it was a consensus that concur with the staff recommendation to approve ownership, design, and construction agreements with GRE. But I think we want to move forward and have that presentation. I think it's item number 7 on our agenda today. With that, we had pretty much miscellaneous. We discussed the Zoom program and teleconference and service a little bit. Consensus was that it went fairly well. And we did adjourn the meeting at 9:15 a.m. So with that, I guess, Commissioner Mattern, make a motion to accept the minutes.
And I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Thank you.
Commissioner Mattern, can I intervene here? I just received an email from Mr. Scott. Even motions have to be taken by roll call, being we are teleconferencing. So we'll need to back up and redo the motion on the audit too. Thank you.
Okay. At this point, we do have a motion and a second on the planning committee minutes. Is there any discussion on that first?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I have a quick question. Actually, two questions, just for a clarification. The first one is the power plant sort of study. That's 59,000. My understanding is that is a 59,310. That will be estimate. Is there, you know, possibility that could increase, you know, more than that? And what would be if some sort of out of ordinary comes out around the corner? What should be expected? Or this is there a final amount that we can rely on? Will be that's the max that they can go to for this contract?
I think
Mabu.
I believe you want to expand on that, John?
Sure. There's some variations. If we go to their, I'll open up their proposals. Kevin, chime in here as well as we go. But some of the variables, some items are based on quantity. So when we get into table 1 and 2 here, you will see they have amounts, and the amounts that are estimated going down here, particularly when we get into our laboratory, depending on the amount of sampling that needs to be taken once they get into doing the assessment, could drive the cost structure to some degree. When Kevin was working with the consultants, we had particularly one consultant actually came out here. Another consultant is very familiar with our site, and visiting with them, they felt comfortable with the volume or quantity of samples that they need to take. So what does that mean? Well, when we get into it, if things are considerably different than they're anticipating, we could end up with a few more samples. That close summary, Kevin? I see you're back.
Yeah, I believe you stated that correctly, John. That would be a correct assumption that if there was any change in it, they would communicate that. But after visiting with them and looking at their itemized proposal, I'm quite comfortable with it. That doesn't mean that it couldn't move a little bit here and there, but I'm pretty comfortable with what we have here.
Okay. So basically, so the maximum expectation is what? Could we say like maybe 20% increase or give and take?
I think 20%. Kevin, you can chime in too. But 20% would be, I believe, a very strong percentage. I don't believe we'll have a 20% overrun unless something surfaces that is really unexpected here.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, the number, Commissioner Mabub, the number of tests that they're doing and how they came up with their estimate are based off of walking the site, and then also Wink has some, both of the proposals actually that we took a harder look at have extensive history in doing this work in other plants, so we're pretty confident in their background and their past experiences that we shouldn't see a huge change unless there's some, you know, dynamite finding on one of these tests that would be completely out of left field. I wouldn't be concerned. I think 20% would be extreme.
That's what I thought. Thanks. My final question is just in terms of a catastrophic event for the Ziegler. They indicated in 24 hours they would be able to provide us that needed generation. I mean, are they going to be delivering those, equipment? You know, in case of, I'm thinking catastrophic, meaning that maybe if we have somewhere, somehow, you know, we don't have no access to the roads or some destruction, I don't know. You know, something. I mean, how will they be able to deliver within 24 hours?
That's a very good question, Commissioner Mabou. We got the PowerPoint on, well, actually,
John,
a catastrophic event plan. We have a shortened presentation from what we presented to the planning committee that we'll be going through, where we can talk about some of those what ifs.
Okay.
I can touch base on that real quick. Ziegler's got 15 to 20 of these 2 megawatt units stationed in our region. The nearest is Shakopee, but they're also in Des Moines, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Omaha. So they can come from several different directions if there are some road closures.
Thank you.
Good questions. Are there any other points of discussion on this motion? All right, if not, sounds like we will do a roll call on this. So Ms. Mathiasen, if you could do that for us, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Mattern?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Thank you.
And that motion carries. Thank you. We'll back up here real briefly to our auditor's statement. We've got to do a roll call on that as well. We do have an existing motion I think we can take from Commissioner Mabou, seconded by Commissioner Weber. And so Ms. Mathiasen, if I could have you take a role on that as well.
Certainly. Commissioner Lahmer?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Thank you.
And that motion also carries again. All right. Thank you. Next, we'd be looking for a motion for approval of supporting the 75th Wilmer Fest anniversary in lieu of our open house and maybe doing something jointly with them. So I'd be looking for a motion and a second on that.
So move.
Second.
I have a motion from Commissioner Erickson and a second from Commissioner Lahmer.
Okay.
Any discussion on that topic? All right, seeing none and hearing none, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could do roll again.
Certainly. Commissioner Mabou?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Thank you.
That motion carries. Thank you. All right, next on our agenda, we have an update on the bid award for the power plant phase 1 and 2 environmental studies. If we can have facilities and maintenance supervisor, Mr. Marty, take that one for us.
Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. As mentioned again or reviewed again, staff is recommending awarding the bid for phase 1 and phase 2 environmental studies and the pre-demolition hazardous material study to be awarded to Wink and Associates in the amount of $59,310. John is showing you the bid proposals that came back, the three that came back. The two that we focused our attention on was Wink and Braun Intertech. We did end up speaking with all three of the bidders though, and after review and answering some final questions, we're comfortable with moving forward with Wink to do that work.
All right, at this time, I'd be looking for a resolution for approval of the bid award.
I will make that resolution.
I have a resolution from Commissioner Mabou. Do I have a second?
Second.
I think I heard Commissioner DeBleek on that. Any discussion on this topic?
I did have a question on, you know, in within the bids between, say, Wenk and Braun Intertech, compared to Burns and McDonald, what's really driving, you know, such a significant increase to that Burns? Is that mostly due to labs and projection there, or, you know, just considering that they're essentially double, if there's other things that they're including, or what kind of drives that huge difference?
Thank you, Commissioner Erickson. That's a good question. We did end up speaking, or I spoke in depth with the engineer from Burns and McDonald regarding that, and she was kind of trying to drill into why they were basically twice as expensive as the other two. Part of that has to do with both Wenk and Braun Intertech have a lot of their experts, geologists, those type of people, and their own lab in-house, where Burns and McDonald outsources a lot of that work, some of it out of state even. So they're going to have some extra costs there, as far as I think one of their firms was coming from Illinois, for example. I'd have to look to be 100% sure, but that was going to drive up some of those costs. She did feel like they were still a little bit high, even accounting for that. So they were going to do some internal audits and see what happened to their bid and get ready for taking another crack at the next phase of the power plant when that's decided.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Good question. Is there any other discussion or questions on this? All right, hearing none, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could do roll on this resolution.
Okay, Commissioner Mattern?
Aye.
Lahmer? Commissioner Lahmer? Carol, you're on mute.
Just a minute.
Aye.
Thank you. Mabou?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Thank you.
The resolution carries. Thank you, everyone. Next on the agenda, we have our generation catastrophic event plan and our staff electrical engineer, Mr. Smith.
Thanks, Commissioner Mattern. Little background on this. With the closure of the power plant, we'll be losing approximately 24 megawatts of local generation. The commission has already looked at installing and owning new local generation, and that project is tabled for the time being. So in order to maintain reliability, we have looked at the feasibility of using rental generation. In this feasibility study, we assumed a complete transmission system failure, or the entire transmission system would be unavailable. So we're just using our distribution system to supply energy to our customers. What we came up with is, while we wait for the rental generation to be delivered, well, I should start off, as soon as there is a citywide blackout, we would initiate our emergency response plan, and that kind of outlines who will do what in the emergency response. It's an existing plan, and it already identifies contact information for different parties and things like that. After that, we'd have the line crew go out and patrol the lines. If it was safe to do so, we would energize a portion of our customers using our existing 12 megawatts of local generation. But just note that the majority of the city would still remain without power until that rental generation is delivered and installed. Beyond that 24 hours, once it is available, we would use a combination of the rental generation and the existing generation to do rolling blackouts throughout the city. And if you take a look at this table here, I'll start with the power plant substation first. We would install four units, so for a total of 8 megawatts of rental generation. We would do four groups of rolling blackouts. So the first group, or group A, would be 34% of feeder one and 50% of feeder two. We're using the 2019 winter peak and 2019 summer peak just to project how much load would be on that group at a time. Group B, we'd have feeder three by itself. It would serve 3.5 megawatts of 2019 winter peak or 4.7 summer peak. After that, we'd go to Group C. That would be just feeder 4. And you can see the estimated megawatts on that. And followed by Group D, which would be feeders 5 and 6 at the same time. Now, at our south sub, again, we'd have 6 megawatts of rental generation, but because of the configuration and there's a little bit smaller load at that substation, we would only have 3 groups for the rolling blackouts. Group A would be the 66% of feeder 1 and all of feeder 11, and Group B would be all of feeder 12 and 13. Group C would be 50% of feeder 2 and all of 14. The reason we broke these things up is to try to get underneath the maximum generation we would have available at each substation. And just a little background on the peak megawatt values is we did have our line crew kind of go through the system and identify where we have customer-owned generation. And we tried to contact them if we could to find out how much generation they had. And so we were able to reduce the peak on some of those feeders a little bit utilizing that customer generation. You'll notice at the southwest substation on our feeder 23, there's a number in red there for the summer peak, 6.25 megawatts. That's a little higher than what our maximum capability would be. We'd only have 6 megawatts at that substation. The idea there is we would probably wouldn't have a catastrophic event during our system peak. If we did, we would run some public service announcements over the radio and newspaper to say, customers, please conserve energy. And again, that's a heavily industrial area, and we're not sure how the industry would respond if there was a catastrophic event, if they would still be, you know, doing their max production lines and things like that. So this is what the rental generation rolling blackout sequence would look like. And I would be able to answer any questions on that.
Commissioners, any questions on the presentation for Mr. Smith? If not, I would look for a motion for approval of the generation catastrophic event plan.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Mabu, we have a motion, and Commissioner DeBleek a second. Any further discussion on the motion? All right, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll.
Thank you. Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mabu?
Aye.
Thank you.
That motion carries. Thank you. All right, Mr. Smith, we'll let you continue on with the transmission investment project and what we're looking at doing there.
Thanks, Commissioner Mattern. John's got the slide pulled up there. What we'll be talking about a little bit here, if you don't mind going to the outline screen there, give you a background on the project, specifically what we're doing here in Willmar. Discuss where negotiations are right now for ownership and engineering design, touch on how much it's going to cost and how we'll pay for it, and give you an update on the schedule. So as we've reported in an earlier presentation, GRE is or has conducted a study on this along with several other utilities. Their scope was to reduce long-term reliability concerns in the Benson area. There's several long-term upgrades, which include a 115 kV transmission line between Appleton and Benson. But what we're concerned about primarily is the shorter-term upgrades here in Wilmer. Those include a 230 to 115 transformer at our Wilmer substation, several 230 and 115 breakers at our Wilmer substation. It's going to require a little bit more land at the Wilmer substation to accommodate that new equipment and also a new control building. Finally, we'd need a new or several, I believe it is one more breaker at the Priam substation at 115 kV. There's an existing 115 kV transmission line between the Willmar and Priam substations that's de-energized right now, and it has been since the Priam substation was energized, but we'll bring that back into service as part of this project. So update on where we are with negotiations. It's industry standard to split ownership along voltage lines. So because Wilmer owns the 230 kV facilities, we would have rights to expand the 230 kV facilities. Because GRE owns the 115 kV facilities at the Wilmer substation, they would have rights to expand the 115 kV facilities. But things like the transformer, which spans both voltage class, it'll go from 230 to 115 kV, and then the control house, which really isn't an actual voltage class equipment, those are up for negotiations. And what we do on that is we follow an existing coordinated local planning agreement, which outlines how those negotiations should be handled. And all things considered, a big factor is revenue neutrality. So in our pricing zone for transmission, we are charged for the transmission facilities we use to deliver power to our customers. And then we're also paid back a revenue for the transmission facilities we own that other utilities used. In the proposed ownership, WMU will become more closely aligned to that revenue neutral position. So right now we budget for about $4 million in expenses in transmission, and this will bring us closer to revenue neutral. I can jump to the next one. So here's the estimated costs for the project. We have both a GRE estimate, which would put us at $7.7 million, and then we had DGR Engineering also put together an estimate, and their estimate was $8.4 million. For this project right now, we're going to budget for $8 million. For the planning committee, we showed a kind of a facility outline of where this equipment is and who will own what. It's critical energy infrastructure, so we can't present that to the public, but it's essentially three breakers at 230 kV that Wilmer will own, seven switches, and then the associated bus work and foundations, that type of thing, in addition to the transformer. GRE would own a new 115 kV breaker, a couple more 115 switches, and their associated bus work as well. And like I said, we'll need land and a control building, and GRE would be responsible for those items in this proposal. Another update on engineering design. Because we've got two utilities that share a substation, one substation, there's going to be a lot of savings if we have one design engineer for this project, because we're going to have similar breakers that are going to be specified. There's going to be similar site work for foundations, rock, fence, that type of thing. So we are going to pursue GRE Engineering doing the engineering design for this substation, and then we will retain DGR Engineering as our owner's representative. We've had conversations in the past with Mr. Scott about that, and statute 453.54 authorizes the city to enter into contracts without advertising for bids, and we expect this project to fall within those statutes. Another update on transformer sizing. Right now, the studies have shown that a 187 MVA transformer would meet the needs and the future needs of our system. So to pay for that, I'll remind you, it was about $8 million that we're expecting for this project. This top table is our existing capital improvement budget. And you can see in the years 2020 and 2021, we have approximately $4 million budgeted for our new office and new generation. And then back in the years 2025 and 2026, we've got another approximately $14 million for this transmission project and the power plant substation project. Just because priorities have changed, we have a new proposed budget, which is the table below it. We would move that reassign that $14 million to the transmission project and the power plant substation project. Again, we're only expecting this to be $12 million, so we should be covered there. And then in the years 2025 and 2026, we would have that $14 million also budgeted just for different projects. update you on schedule. Right now, GRE is putting a draft agreement together. It will be included in a WMU GRE transmission-to-transmission interconnection agreement that's currently in progress. It'll just be an exhibit or an addendum on that that defines how this project gets owned and constructed. In the summer of 2020, we expect GRE would approve the project and the ownership split. That would allow us then in January of 2021 to start material procurement. The big lead time item on this is a transformer, which will take approximately 12 months to get delivered after order. And this is all proposed to be in service in the spring of 2022. So what we're looking for today is authorization for staff to proceed with the proposed ownership split. Authorization for staff to pursue an agreement with GRE for engineering services. We don't necessarily need authorization to enter into that agreement today. We just are looking for support to pursue it. And then authorization for staff to reallocate funds towards this project. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? General Manager Heron, can I have you take us back one slide to the recommendations? Are we needing to pass these separately, or can this go as one fell swoop?
Commissioner Mattern, we can have one motion authorizing all, as we are not entering into agreements at this time. As Justin indicated, we're looking for endorsement from the commission so that we can continue negotiations and discussions with GRE.
Thank you. Commissioners, I'd be looking for a motion to proceed with the recommendations from staff on this project.
I'll make that motion.
Oops. I'll second.
I'll second that.
I think I heard Commissioner DeBleek on the second. Commissioner Lammer had the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Or any additional questions at all? I don't hear any. So Ms. Mathiasen, if I could have you take roll on this one.
Okay. Commissioner DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Lammer?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Thank you.
That motion carries. Thank you. All right, Mr. Smith, thank you for the update on that. And I'm going to let you take one more here on the 2020 underground construction.
Thanks, Commissioner Mattern. This is an annual construction bid. This year, we released the bids on February 26th. We have a budget of $474,000 for this project. Bids were opened on March 17th. And here's the results for the annual underground construction. This is for new customers. This is improvements to our system. This is to repair failed cable, that type of thing. We received two bids. The low bidder was ONS Construction in the amount of $228,000. ONS has been used extensively by WMU for underground projects, and I have no concerns awarding the bid to ONS. Second contract would be for single-phase replacement. This is to replace old single-phase underground cable. This is the third year we're doing this, and we've had success with our reliability numbers on this project. Two bids were received. The low bid was Midwest Underground with a bid of $116,000. We've used them, like I said, the last 2 years for this, and I have no concerns awarding the single-phase replacement contract to Midwest Underground either. As John has pulled up here, we've got the estimated bid tabulation. What we had is we have the contractors bid individual pricing for boring and trenching, backhoe, equipment operations, labor, that type of thing. And then we apply it to an estimated footage that we use or plan to do this summer for construction. And that's how we total what you see in this table. In the end, the total for both construction projects is $345,000 estimated, which falls under our budget. Are there any questions on these two contracts?
No questions from commissioners? Okay, if not, I would be looking.
Yeah, I have go ahead. One question is, this just replace old underground, or are we still, you know, undergrounding some of our single phase that's still above ground?
So this project is specifically to replace old underground wire. You're probably referring to kind of an underground conversion project that we had done a few years ago. Right now, we're in a place where most of our overhead services are now kind of on Second Street Southeast, and the city is planning to do a street repair there. At that time, we would do an underground conversion on that street. But this specific contract would be just to replace the underground existing cable.
To expand on that a little bit, Justin, if I can. Yes, Commissioner DeBleek, there was a multi-year project there for undergrounding the residential area. For the most part, that project's done with a few miscellaneous areas, as Justin mentioned. And when that was completed, we moved to our underground cable that, Jaron, was what, vintage 1980 and older, and or high fault areas. So that's the areas we're focused on. This is, as Justin said, our third year focusing on the undergrounds area, underground cable that is giving us some challenges here with reliability. Justin, this year, or we got one more year to go yet? This year, and anyway, I think we're pretty much through our more challenging areas.
Yeah, this year we'll complete the known problem areas, and then we'll regroup and see if we need to continue doing this or if we need to focus elsewhere.
Thank you, Justin, or Justin, or Jaron, I mean. Sorry, I kept calling you Justin.
We had too many Justins on the line today. Yeah. Any other questions from commissioners? If not, again, I'd be looking for a resolution for approval of the 2020 underground construction projects.
So moved.
I'll second.
All right. We have a resolution from Commissioner Maboub and a second from Commissioner Erickson. Any further discussion? Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll.
Certainly. Commissioner Lahmer?
Aye.
Maboub?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Thank you.
That resolution carries. Thank you, everyone. All right, number nine on the agenda. We're moving through finally here. Financial reports, Ms. Runge.
Thank you. We'll start by taking a look at the electric division first. Operating revenues on the electric division, year-to-date margins, $5,187,953 compared to last year-to-date, $5,897,234. We're $709,281 behind last year. And looking at the overall kilowatt sales through the month of January, residential was down about 850,000 kilowatts, and commercial and industrial was down about 1.4 million. So our kilowatt sales for the month of January were down about 2.2 million. That is likely attributed to just the weather. We've had a pretty mild winter compared to last January, where we had the polar vortex come into play. This year, we didn't have just a handful of days that were at or below zero. Looking at our operating expenses in the orange in the middle, $3,918,395 compared to last year, $3,913,586. So expenses are $4,809 ahead of last year. Overall retained earnings, $1,054,193. Again, compared to last year, we are $653,319 behind last year on the electric margins. Taking a look at the water utilities, operating revenues, $475,899. We are $7,336 ahead of last year. Operating expenses, $268,588. We are $71,583 below last year at this point in the year. Overall retained earnings, $217,063 or $78,200 ahead of last year. Moving on to the heating division, Margins for through the month of February, $80,280 compared to the $221,685 last year. We are $141,405 behind last year. Expenses, $61,822. We are $32,431 behind last year. And overall margins, $25,284, which is $109,478 behind last year at this point in the year. Taking a look at our overall business margins, revenue, $5,744,132. We are $843,350 behind last year at this point in the year. Operating expenses, $4,248,805. We are $99,205 below last year. And overall margins for the company, $1,296,540. We are $684,597 behind last year at this point in the year. The graphs are also attached depicting those numbers that we just went over. Are there any questions on any of the financial statements?
Denise, just looking at what we've got on the electric side in particular for revenue, being that it was a little bit mild this year, revenue is slightly down, and now I presume we're going to be facing a little bit more of a revenue decline with the coronavirus situation. I think it's incumbent, of course, that we just keep an eye on expenses and try and tighten things wherever we can to keep an eye on things for a while here. Commissioners, any questions on the financials?
Nope.
All right, we'll continue on with the investment portfolio.
Taking a look at our investments, we have $26,913,500 invested currently, and our earnings were 0.44. Obviously, markets are down due to the coronavirus affecting the system pretty significantly. Any questions on the investments?
Doesn't look like it. I'll let you continue.
All right. Taking a look at our cost of power for the month of January, we are at 5.8 cents a kilowatt. Overall average, the 6.9 cents right where we've been.
So at least that's holding down a little bit, so that's good. All right. Thank you, Ms. Runge, for the reports. Commissioners, any final questions on financials? All right. Seeing none, General Manager Heron, I'll let you give us an update on district heating.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. The commission asked that between now and the decommissioning of district heat that we provide updates, monthly updates. So at this point, we had 6 customers this past month disconnect. We are sitting at around 90 customers as we speak today. Another letter was sent out strongly encouraging customers to continue to transition off. We have also heard from a number of the contractors, and they are receiving additional calls at this point in time in the process from customers to do the transition. So it's definitely in the forefront of our customers' mind, and they know the need to move forward with that. So hopefully as we continue to go forward, they will continue to transition over. So each month when we provide a report, that number continues to shrink.
Thank you for the update there. Commissioners, any further questions on that update? All right, if not, we'll let you continue on with the General Manager's report.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Mattern. In your packet also, and what I have up on the screen is just an update. I want to say thank you for the support from the commissioners. Here at the utilities, no different than any place else. It's challenging times for us. We're trying to stay ahead of the curve here. In addition, you know, we pushed out, and at the bottom of this, we pushed out measures that we've implemented in the different departments, admin, power plant, meter department, line department, so on and so forth. For right now, we are continuing to watch what changes. It's all fluid. We're continuing to monitor the Governor Walz's press releases every day to keep abreast of what's going on and make changes as needed. right here in this paragraph, we also heard from Representative Baker. He asked that we do what we can with utility at this point in time to help our customers. We also heard from Mayor Calvin, basically the same thing, do what we can to help our customers do our part. Also, when we had our planning committee meeting, we talked about maybe making a donation to the food shelf. In addition to that, we maybe need to talk about our district heat. I would like that discussion take place at the planning committee level. So with that said, there will be a meeting invite. We'll have Beth push out a meeting invite to see if the planning committee can meet either later this week yet or the first part of next week to talk about some of these challenges that we have before us presently here, and keep the planning committee and the commission abreast of what we're doing here at the utility. Any questions, comments, suggestions?
Doesn't sound like it. Anything further you want to continue with?
All right, thank you. Missouri River, we also received notice, and it's attached in your packets. They are canceling their annual meeting as well. That's coming up here in May 6th. And our MMUA Legislative Conference is canceled as well, and that was to be held here at the end of this month, or next week, I believe it was. So that was canceled as well. The APPA Annual Conference coming up in June is still on, as good as we know, but if that changes, or depending on how long this sticks around, that might change as well, but we'll keep everybody posted. So talk about that. Our Red Rock Hydroelectric, we talked about that last time. I reached out to a number of local utilities here, meaning Marshall, Benson, Alexandria, to see if they had commissioners interested in going. It sounds like they all have interested commissioners in going. They would like to make it a one-day event if they could, by either pooling together and hiring a bus, and or depending on how many people go, if we can fit in a small plane, possibly fly there and back. That way it would be an easy day. So more to come. So far I have one commissioner that indicated they would like to go. I believe we have a second commissioner that's thinking about it. So if anybody else has an interest in going, by all means, please let Beth know, so that if we do hire a plane and or a bus, that we have a head count. That would conclude my update, unless there's additional questions, Commissioner Matter.
Thank you, General Manager Heron. Any questions for General Manager Heron at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, my commission, actually my mic was muted, so I couldn't ask earlier, but thank you, John, for the report. Just wondering, I read the letter that our state, Dave Baker, suggestions, and is there anything that, because I know that I have several businesses in downtown area that kind of a little bit panicking now, panic mode in terms of the corona and how it can affect their businesses. Is there anything that we can do? What will be our capacity, basically? I was just wondering, as a utility, you know, I know that a lot of people suggested different things, but is this something that the planning committee will take on, or is this something like, as a general, the whole commission will be able to discuss?
Commissioner Mabu, that was an excellent question. Everybody at this point in time, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty and nobody quite knows where this is going to end. So I would say we start with the planning committee to brainstorm on options, ideas, look at what we can do, and then elevate it to the commission as a whole at that point in time. That would be my suggestion or recommendation to the commission.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate those comments and I certainly concur with that. I think that's a good starting point. There's probably a lot of discussion to be had that can be hashed out at the planning committee level. Any other questions for General Manager Heron? All right. If not, is there any other business to come before the commission today?
Commissioner Mattern, if I may ask, how did it work today? How did the information flow? Keeping it up, keeping the information open all the way through with all the commissioners, just seeing a snapshot of the number of commissioners on. Did that all work okay? Do we want to continue with this process, or is there other suggestions?
If I could walk us through, maybe each commissioner give a quick response to that. I'll start with Commissioner Lahmer.
I think it worked as good as it can. You know, there's always, when you're in person, sometimes a little bit more discussion or that type of thing. But I think it works well. I appreciate doing this rather than just over the phone. It's easier to, you know, make the suggestions or come forward at that time. So I think this is a good way to go for the near future.
And Commissioner Weber.
Yeah, I think it worked very well. I didn't have any issues. I would recommend using this format in the future.
Commissioner Mahbub, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it worked for me the best, to be honest with you. This is really great. I would even suggest it if we can adapt to this. It's really worked very well, very well. Just missing the lunch, that's it, you know, but it worked out fine. Great. We should adapt to this.
Commissioner DeBleek, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it works well. It's probably not up to the same as having face-to-face meetings, but this gets us by with these, you know, these times we're having right now that allows us to be able to have a meeting and meet the 10-foot separation rule, so which helps. We're able to get our business done and keep things moving.
Good points. Commissioner Erickson, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it went really well. I didn't have any problems. I think the only thing is to use wired headphones. My AirPods died halfway through, so I had to run and grab some ones that I could plug in. So other than that, yeah, I liked it. It worked well.
Good. Yeah, I concur. I think all things considered, this worked as well as it needed to. I'm not sure that I like the replacement of the face-to-face myself either, but for what we're dealing with right now, I think it works well. I think if anybody has additional comments or suggestions for improvements, whether it be from staff or commissioners, make sure to move those forward. Maybe let Mike know or General Manager Heron know, and we can certainly incorporate that in the future as well. Anything else to come before the commission then?
Commissioner Mattern, yeah, I'd just like to thank Mike. Mike is the brains behind the setup here. He went through all the work of getting this set up for everyone. So thank you to Mike. Mr. Scott. Mike, you might have Mr. Scott muted.
No, I think I'm okay now. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Are we meeting all legal procedural requirements?
Yes, you are. And I apologize, I didn't flag the issue about roll call votes for every vote ahead of time, but we did obviously settle into a good process there. So from my perspective, this was fairly smooth, obviously an unusual situation that even allows us to have a meeting like this, but I wouldn't hesitate to recommend this format for any other city or governing body that's considering doing this.
Thank you again for your insights on that, Mr. Scott, as well.
Quick question. Is this a cost to us to this? I didn't ask that question. Sorry.
Mike, you want to take that, please?
There's a monthly charge of $15 for one host. So pretty minimal.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Any additional thoughts or business to come before the commission today? All right, hearing none, I would look for a motion and a second for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. I adjourn this meeting at this time. Thank you, everyone.